right, everybody. This is Professor X here, and I am with Victoria Ajami, and I'm also with my co-host Katrina and Peyton with the Starving Artist Podcast. And before we begin, we want to introduce our wonderful guest who has taken the time to be here with us. You want to share your greeting, Victoria?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm really thrilled to be here, and thank you for having me on. It's really great to reconnect with you and to be here and to, you know, chat, maybe, you know, share whatever I might be able to be helpful with your audience.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's kick it to our co-hosts so they can introduce themselves. Let's start with Katrina.
And this is Katrina. It's nice to be back on the podcast. I'm looking forward to having a great conversation with Vicky today.
And it's Peyton, and probably the first time hearing my voice. I'm usually in the background, but should be a good conversation today.
And our other member, Rocky, had another obligation. We did want him to be here today, but, you know,
the show must go on.
The show must go on. So just a little bit of background here. Vicky of Communication Via Design is a full-service firm dedicated to designing clear, creative, confident communications for nonprofits and social enterprises, changing our world for the better. I love that opening tag, statement, purpose. And we're just going to get right into it. So the first question here, what inspired you to pursue a creative career? Now you can kind of take that as you will, but what inspired you to take this path?
Great question. Should I start at the very beginning?
Wherever you feel like jumping in.
I'll start, with, my parents. So my parents, are of Syrian, I'm of Syrian and Armenian descent. They came over, took a courageous journey from Aleppo, Syria to the United States, just after their marriage. And their determination was to provide their future children, you know, a better future. And so America, of course, is the land of opportunity. And my father was in the Oriental rug business and antiques. And my mother had worked for a pharmaceutical company doing inspections when they came over. Well, that was her job, basically a job that they would give her. But despite their countless challenges and their limited formal education, my parents instilled in us the values of hard work, integrity, and the pursuit of excellence. So this, you know, carries some pressure to excel academically, you know, in doing that, in the pursuit of good grades and obedience, you know, my passion led me toward a different path, and that sort of developed later in my education, and that was a path of artistic expression. So even so, my parents envisioned for me a more traditional route. But when I entered college, and that was college that I had to work hard toward to actually afford to go to college. I was the first in my family to attend a four-year college. And so I was exposed to all aspects of fine arts. And that was absolutely wonderful. Great foundation of sculpture and art history and illustration, photography, just a wide range. And the discipline of graphic design actually appealed to me the most. And when I think about that, it had occurred to me that my exposure to Oriental rugs was really a huge influence on that decision and why I felt so connected to it. And I never thought about it until that time, but the colors, the patterns, the textures, craftsmanship, you know, all of that. But in particular, the symbolic images. And those really influenced my calling. So communication really is that, you know, abstract symbols, icons, and design. the symbolic meanings of the shapes and the iconography, but the purpose, you know, that these were a status of prayer, you know, had functional use or decorative in the same way that design does, right? Design can communicate on all those levels. So from that point forward, I was very keenly aware of how my heritage actually contributed to shaping my identity and my worldview. So after graduating college, I moved to Los Angeles and started my career and worked for many agencies, soaking up as much experience as possible. And that was just terrific insights that I received, both on the business side as well as, you know, on the design side, making all kinds of connections. But years later, fate led me back to Boston, and that's where I would sow the seeds of my own company, Communication Via Design.
Wow, great intro. And, you know, I think sometimes Rocky does a good job of introducing, you know, our guest and talking about all their accolades and things that they've done. But I feel like just you did a good job of just being clear, just like in your mission statement, be clear, you know, confident and talk about what you do. So Peyton, you want to hit question number two?
Can you share a pivotal moment in your journey as a creative entrepreneur?
There are probably two pivotal moments, but I'll say that the first, in sort of developing a company and a company culture, it happens gradually, right? Like, you know, first you're just sort of doing your thing and you're working on your own, and then you realize you need help and you reach out and you know, the first thing you know, you have someone working with you as an intern, and then it's part-time, and then you make that real plunge to, you know, bring them on full-time, and then you become an employer, and it's scary. It's very scary. And, you know, you get a little bit more, you know, you get more comfortable with that and you continue to grow. So it really happened in small steps as far as the growth of the company. We're 30 years old now. Wow. So, you know, after about 20 years of this, you know, nice progression with the company, I was running my business in a large office in Boston Seaport, and we had a staff of about 10. And at a time, several employees decided that they were moving out of state, and that was for personal reasons. And at the same time, I had others who were commuting from pretty far distances to come to work, and they were hoping for more flexibility with their schedules. So this was all on the heels of an economic downturn, and I just started to see everything spiral, and I had to quickly pull myself out of that mindset that this is the worst thing ever and say, what's the opportunity here? And so I did finally see that opportunity, and it was clear that my business model wasn't working for everyone. And my company really is based on the people who are, you know, there to leverage it, not the person who's running it. So I really valued these long-term working relationships. So I took, you know, I made the decision. I took everybody off payroll. Everybody worked as subcontractors after that. So they were working on projects as they were coming in the door, and we created a hybrid work environment. So that was, you know, many years before the pandemic, and much sooner than hybrid working models became the norm. So
what year was that? Or like when?
Yeah, that was around 2015, 14, 15. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the advantage was I had, you know, happier team members. I had better working relationships. You know, people were really accountable because they knew they had to be, and I wasn't looking over their shoulders, and that was nice. And then, you know, that gave me the ability to cast a larger net for talent. So I could work with and bring people on to my team that were anywhere in the country and even beyond. I had some people working with me that would travel to Panama, and they would work from Panama. So, you know, that continues to happen, but it's also more standard And that also led to downsizing my office to a smaller location, which is still in the seaport. But, you know, it created much greater efficiencies all around. So, you know, that pivotal moment really turned out to be quite advantageous for everyone. And, you know, I never would have thought, you know, I thought that would, you know, let's see what happens for a while. But, you know, here we are 10 years later and still working well. And I would say I do have another pivotal moment if you have a time. So then moving along, you know, the company had also been, we considered ourselves generalists. We were working in a number of different industry areas. And that included everything from real estate development, law firms, financial services, tech, a lot of tech. And, you know, I kind of came to a time where I discovered that true success lies not in climbing that corporate ladder or aggressive company growth or doubling revenues, but it really felt better to work with clients where we were lifting each other up and ascending together. So this led to recharging my company's mission to work with nonprofits and social enterprise organizations. So that's who we're working with. And as you know, and it always felt good to do good work, but it feels even better to work collaboratively and in partnerships with organizations that are shaping our world for the better.
It seems like you value the symbiotic relationship with both your clients and with your employees, and that's how you really can be successful.
It's very, very true. You know, I don't consider myself, you know, a boss or a manager or, even a leader in that sense. I'm a collaborator, and it's really nice to collaborate because I feel like we collaborate internally. We collaborate with our clients externally, and it's very flat. You know, there's sort of an even level of expertise across the board, and just, you know, respect and collaboration for everybody's contribution and input.
Wow. I may come back to that question in the latter half of our podcast, because I like that, because that really touches an intrinsic value, not just for those who may be listening. You know, you want to follow your passion, pursue passion, as they say. But that makes me think about the path that I took and how I kind of came back, because I was trying to climb that corporate ladder, as you kind of said, and had some realizations and some epiphanies later on in life. But I like what you're saying there. And, you know, it makes me think of this question here. How were you able to stay resilient in the face of a lot of those challenges that you may have come across?
Yeah, that's because there definitely are. There's lots of challenges, and some, you know, within your control and some beyond your control. So it's really important to just stay flexible and adaptable. But I think the most important thing is always staying true to your why. Your why and why you're doing this and why you started doing this in the first place is important to come back to, because it's the foundation, it's the grounding that you continue to come back to again and again, especially when things get messy. There's always times in which you're really challenged with times where, let's say, you know, the financial situation is really difficult, and you may have to make some sacrifices, you know, both personally and within the company. And those things come hard, especially when you feel like, hey, I'm working hard, and, you know, we're on this upward trajectory. What's this all about? I don't deserve this. And those are the times that really make you ask that question, like, do I love this enough to, like, weather this storm, or to figure something out that's going to allow me to stay in this game? And if not, that's okay. You know, it's right. Okay. It might be pushing you in another direction,
right?
But if it's telling you that, you know what, I to my core, I still believe in this, and you know, I'll do what I can.
Yeah.
And I'll make sacrifices until I can, you know, just sort of see it through. And things, you know, it's a roller coaster, definitely.
And that's not to say, you know, in any, like if you had pivoted to a totally different career, you would still have challenges and you would still have to be resilient. So it's not like just because you pivot, you would have, you know, less obstacles, but to have those obstacles and while you're still pursuing your passion, you're still dreaming big. I like how you said that you were still able to navigate around that. So I appreciate that. And I'm sure our listeners too, who are very young people who are trying to find themselves and they're trying to find their discovery of where they fit in, trying to find their passion and their purpose. But right now, yeah.
I would say, like, but keep in mind too, and as you know, I mean, I know you've been there too, that every time you overcome a challenge, you learn something about yourself, you learn something about the situation around you, and you end up in a better place, but you also are ready for the next challenge. And there will be another one. There will be another mountain to climb, and you're a little bit more ready for it. And then you climb that one and you say, wow, man, I never would have thought that I could have done that. And you did. Yeah. And then there's going to be another.
Yeah. And what a great feeling it is, because you can always think back to it.
All right. Well, we've had a great conversation so far. And when we get back from our break, we're going to have a quick rapid fire questions with Vicky so we can get to know her a little bit better.
The Starving Artist Podcast is a band of super talented, sophisticated rock stars. We aim to challenge ourselves and the status quo. Now, the Starving Artist Podcast Network is expanding nationally from New York City to Portland, Oregon, and broadcasting on local TV courtesy of Urban Media Art Studio right here in Malden, Massachusetts. Please support the movement by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Starving Artist Podcast, and follow us on Instagram at starving_artist_podcast. You can also find us on Patreon and listen to our podcast on Anchor, Apple, Google, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Rocky, Xavier, and I want to sincerely thank all who have been loyal ambassadors of the Starving Artist Podcast Network. But we ain't done, y'all. Stay tuned and check out the latest and greatest. This is your girl, Katrina, and I'm out of here.
All right, welcome back from that commercial break. And now, as promised, we're going to have our rapid-fire questions with Vicky. So normally we have a one-minute timer, and we're just going to ask you a few random questions to get your opinion. There's no right answer. Just let us know the first thing that comes to your mind. All right, so the first one is, play it safe or risk it all?
Risk it all.
Oh.
Do you consider yourself a specialist or a generalist?
Specialist.
If you could choose, no more social media or no more messaging apps?
No more messaging apps?
Are you a cookie person or a cake person?
Cookie, for sure.
Do you consider tomato to be a fruit or a vegetable?
Well, I know it's a fruit, but I still
That's okay. A good one.
Yeah. Do you prefer happy songs or sad songs?
I like more intense songs. I'm good with that.
Okay. When driving in the car, do you have your windows open or the AC on?
AC on.
Yeah.
Reality TV or scripted dramas?
Oh, scripted dramas, but documentaries if I could choose a third.
Okay.
All right. That's our time.
All right. I like those questions, especially that tomato, like, is it a fruit or is it a vegetable? And, you know, I heard something like if it has seeds in it, then it's a fruit.
If it, yeah, tomato is a fruit, but it's a vegetable.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just what it is. Yeah. Come on, it's vegetable.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for answering those questions. And we're going to get right into the second portion of this. And so, you know, when we're thinking about the industry, you talked about having a hybrid model, kind of moving forward, being progressive with your thinking and your strategy. Now, thinking about the next 5 years, you can even take this 5 to 10 if you want. What type of trends, you know, you don't have to give me too many, but what trends do you see in this field that are going to be utilized more, that students should be thinking about more, incorporating into their tool belts?
Yeah. Great question. I think there's quite a bit on the horizon, right? So the first is probably the most obvious, and, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality, I think are biggies. There's no really working around these things. They continue to evolve. These immersive experiences for consumers, but really all of us, general public, I mean, businesses use these technologies for their own product demonstrations, virtual showrooms. But, you know, for us, it enhances storytelling. And that's what we do as designers, right? We're telling stories. So I think that's one probably high on the list. Sustainability, you know, this is where our earth is going. And so environmental concerns are growing, and there's a rising demand for sustainable design and eco-friendly products. So marketers are already emphasizing sustainability as a key selling point. So designers, you know, we're being brought on to work with these marketers, right? So, you know, prioritizing those materials and practices that minimize environmental impact. That's an area. Minimalism, simplification. You know, we were just talking about social media, right? There's so much clutter out there, you know, noise and visual clutter, and it's just information overload. So minimalist design and simplified messaging really helps brands right now. Clean, intuitive designs that are concise and easily digestible for content. You know, I see that as definitely a trend, and you know, maybe that will change. The pendulum usually shifts. So, you know, right now that seems to be, and maybe over the next 5 years, 10 years could change. Right. Inclusive design. This is just something that's so near and dear to me. You know, diversity and inclusion are central themes right now. Brands need to ensure that their products and campaigns and websites are accessible and representative of diverse audiences, both, you know, in terms of design, functionality, and messaging. So that's a big one.
Yeah, especially that last one, because we kind of overlap in that space with accessibility. And inclusion. Very nice.
We talked about this a little bit earlier, but how do you navigate the balance between artistic integrity and commercial success?
You know, with what we're doing as designers, it's quite different than fine art, right? So fine art is artistic expression. It's personal expression. In the design world, you know, we have to almost take ourselves out of that equation, right? Because we're more or less acting as a bridge between the client's goals, what it is they're trying to achieve, and how we help visualize it and put it in a visual representational form. So, you know, the artistic expression then becomes like, what are the aesthetics that we're choosing to utilize to leverage this message and to achieve their goals? So, you know, those really come with high standards, and we're very well trained to implement those aesthetics to deliver that message. So it can be a bit of a struggle at times, but we have to sort of, again, not make it personal, but to educate our clients as to why we're making the decisions we're making, really advocate for our decisions. And, you know, at the end of the day, yes, they do kind of make the decision, right? And they, you know, may get their way. But the integrity is something I think we always have to stand behind and you know, just communicate as best we can so that, you know, sometimes we have to change minds. We have to change perspectives. And again, not because we like something and it's, you know, we're trying to get them to like it, but they have to think beyond themselves too and think about what's best for the product or service or company. And in doing that, that's where the designer has the better perspective.
Right. And that kind of makes me go back to the first question I had about thinking about where the landscape or where things are kind of heading. And we talked about, you know, you talked about sustainability, you talked about inclusion. Now, when you think about AI, now, do you use any AI tools or anything like that?
You know, I personally don't, and my team does not, but we're looking into what it does, you know, can it be advantageous? Because it's not something we can avoid. We just don't want it to be sort of our go-to and how we create, but if it can augment what we're doing, that's great. And so there's still some exploring and some experimentation, I think, that needs to happen.
Yeah, that's good, because I'm thinking, like, how does it change the creative landscape? We've all heard of, I think we had this conversation before about the ChatGPTs and the Googles and the things of that sort. I'm just wondering now, because you're in education as well, so you're around a lot of students. How do you think that it could be a crutch or it could be a benefit? You can take that either way. Do you think it will become more of a crutch as we move forward, or you think it could be more of a benefit as far as artificial intelligence?
I think utilized well, I think it can absolutely be a benefit. I think it's going to take things forward for sure. We just have to make sure it stays in the hands of the designer and not, you know, so that's where I think designers need to stay ahead of that curve, because then anybody could pick up a tool and, you know, have crank out designs and think that that's okay. But without formal education and a designer's eye, because it's not just taking what it gives us, but we still, it takes the designer to modify it and make it something that's very custom, and we can't lose that perspective, right? And that's where it's not just bringing in likes and dislikes, but it's bringing in the strategy. You know, what's the strategy and what's the end goal and how are we meeting that communication challenge? So it's like we're still putting all those pieces together, but the designer needs to guide that process.
Before we conclude with our discussion, I want to follow up with that. I've been doing some research with a lot of people using Canva. I'm sure you've mm-hmm. heard of Canva. And I do some work in schools as well. And so there's a lot of students, because they have like an education package, they get a significant discount of using, you know, tools like Canva. And when I came up in school, I was using a lot of Adobe. Like Adobe mm-hmm. was pushed on us, you know, you got to get the Adobe package. But my point is a lot of people are turning away from designers and they're doing it like a do-it-yourself with some of these tools like Affinity, some of these tools like Canva. What do you think about people kind of doing it themselves and not relying on designers so much?
Well, I think that's a tendency, right, that that we can't really avoid. And it's frustrating, right? Because, you know, I think there is definitely a valid concern that that our work is being devalued. And, you know, when you could be doing this for so much less, and, you know, then it takes away livelihoods. And that's what we're all in fear of. So I think that's also why we can't turn a blind eye to it. I think we just have to figure out how to utilize these tools, like you said, to a greater benefit that, you know, it becomes part of our toolkit as opposed to being the end solution. And I think we have to do that, but we also have to continue to educate. That's just so important. I think about the early days of the internet, right? So that was the Wild West also. Oh, yeah. You know, here comes the internet. And so any engineer can build a website, and that's what was happening, right? You don't need to have a designer involved. You know, we can build, we have all the tools. Well, you know, it took a while, but, you know, it finally came around. And so designers are absolutely needed. And it created UX and UI design also. So it gave us even more avenues to be relevant. And I think, you know, rather than fear, I think this will all go in a direction that will eventually rely on creatives once again.
Yeah, and even though the AI tools are available to the masses, it still takes a level of expertise to get the best output with it. So you add your own, you know, creative expertise and knowledge, you can get a better product than just a random person putting in prompts.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation, Vicky. We enjoyed getting to know you and a little bit about your company. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this afternoon. Can you let us know where our listeners can connect with you, either online or otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. So our offices are in the Seaport at 23 Dry Dock Ave, and we're on the 7th floor. We'd love to have you guys come by. Okay. So.
Hey, that's fine. Me and the team could come down.
And the best way to reach me is email. And my email address is Vicky, V-I-C-K-I, at C via D, communication via design.com. So C via D.com.
Okay. And do you have a social media page or a website?
Yep. The website is www.cviad.com. And all our social media links are in there. So you can also please follow us. We'd love to have you follow us. We'd love to not have it be a one-way conversation. We'd love to have a nice exchange. So absolutely welcome that on social media or any other means. So check us out.
Yeah, nice. And I appreciate that. And I think, like you said, it's we appreciate the insight from you because you've been doing this for so long. You've been in this game for so long. And we appreciate your insight. This is Professor X signing off.
This is Peyton signing off.
This is Vicky signing off.
This is Katrina signing off. The Starving Artist Podcast.
Starving Artist Podcast.
Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast. All right. Cut.
If you need me to redo anything, I'm happy to do so.
No.
We can fix it in post.
Yeah.